Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio on the 18th of September, 2023. Among the latest developments in relation to Europe, President Zelensky has implied Ukrainian refugees will resort to terrorism if the West curtails aid. Volodymyr Zelensky implied in an interview with The Economist, Ukrainian refugees in Europe might resort to terrorism if Western aid to Ukraine were curtailed. The Economist report reads, curtailing aid to Ukraine will not only prolong the war, Mr. Zelensky argues, and it would create risk for the West in its own backyard. There is no way of predicting how the millions of Ukrainian refugees in European countries would react to their country being abandoned. Ukrainians have generally behaved well and are very grateful to those who shelter them. They will not forget that generosity, but it would not be a good story for Europe if it were to drive these people into a corner. This is clearly an act of intimidation, extortion even, as would befit a crime family, but we're getting a lot of that at home and abroad. Meanwhile, after a meeting between the president of North Korea and Vladimir Putin, I like them both, there's been an agreement that North Korea will send 300,000 to 500,000 troops to assist Russia. Now, let me make an observation here. These North Korean troops are among the toughest and best trained and most disciplined in the world. They make the American Army look like a bunch of pansies compared to the North Korean troops. They are really good. So I believe this is a major development. And it does not bode well if the war should expand. They're also going to deliver new KN-90 multiple launch rocket systems They have 8 missile tubes. The first version was shown in 2015 at a parade in honor of the 70th anniversary of the Workers' Party of Korea. It's believed they have a warhead weighing up to 190 kilograms and are capable of hitting targets at a distance of at least 220 kilometers. So, how would NATO respond? Get this. In the event of a direct war with Russia, the NATO military bloc will utilize the 300,000 troops already on the border with Russia in the first month. NATO will then attract up to 3.5 million troops, according to Admiral Rob Bauer, the head of the military committee of the North Atlantic Alliance. But where do they think they're going to get those 3.5 million troops? Why? You and your children, of course. Ready to go fight and die for the armpit of Eastern Europe, Ukraine? Well, I got to tell you, I'm fairly astonished by this. But there's a poll now. 48% of Americans under the age of 30 support sending U.S. troops to defend Ukraine. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, those troops that are going to be sent are going to be under the age of 30. So are they volunteering? I mean, look, the American military is tattered and torn with our pink tanks and tutus. Going woke was a completely moronic development, which appears to me to be part and parcel of the destruction of America taking place at a pace that leaves your head spinning. Opening up borders, not enforcing shoplifting laws, going ahead and promoting transgender and, you know, anal and oral sex to little kids. Give me a break. This is just disgusting, but this is what the Biden administration stands for. A poll released by CBS, YouGov, shows 48% of Americans under 30 support sending U.S. troops to defend Ukraine from Russia's invasion of the former Soviet state. You know, these under 30, of course, are massively ignorant. They do not understand the coup of 2014 that took out the Russia-friendly president. They don't understand Zelensky's a sham. He's a petty dictator. That this is a neo-Nazi state. That since 2014, there'd been shelling of the Donbass, where there are a whole lot of ethnic Russians, Russian-speaking, Russian-friendly in Donetsk and Luhansk area. That Putin intervened because they were about to undertake a massive onslaught. That Kiev was going to slaughter all those ethnic Russians. That Kiev was making overtures to join NATO. That Russia had made it very clear that its national security could no more tolerate Ukraine becoming a NATO nation than the United States could tolerate Canada or Mexico becoming allies of Russia, though I must say there's far more warrant for Canada or Mexico to become allies of Russia than there is for Ukraine to join NATO, because Russia actually has been seeking amicable, peaceful relations with the West, which has been sabotaged again and again by figures like Victoria Nuland and Blinken and a host of others who are crusaders for Zionism. These people are in the forefront of those who are placing the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. So you got to understand our Congress. is Israeli-occupied territory. That's why this is going on apace. This is just absurd. There's no national interest of the United States in Ukraine. Historically, Ukraine was a part of the old Russia, the Soviet Union. It was Zbigniew Brzezinski in his book, The Grand Chessboard, who suggested that because Ukraine was a breadbasket of Russia, that if you could pry it away, you could weaken the bear. As Russia, of course, is colloquially known. The poll continues. Support for sending U.S. troops to defend Ukraine drops dramatically for each older age group. 28% of Americans 30 to 44, down to 17% 45 to 64, 8% among those 65 and older who have seen more of life, who know more about the horrors of war. This is really stunning. I mean, are they also willing to bring back the draft? I mean, that would be what would be required if we're going to get involved. Get this. Overall, this is now overall. Only 34% Democrats support sending U.S. troops to Ukraine. 17% of Republicans, 18% of Independents. Those are basically the same, of course, statistically. This poll has a margin of error of plus or minus 2.7%. So what we're saying is 34% of Democrats and only half as many Republicans and Independents support sending troops to Ukraine. Overall, 24% of adult Americans support sending U.S. troops to Ukraine. Support for sending weapons, 54%. Aid and supplies, 67%. Sanctions on Russia, 75%. That's all very, very interesting. Meanwhile, so where are they going to get those 3.5 million troops? Are they going to get them from the United States? Admiral Bauer noted NATO's new regional defense plans involve further reinforcement on the borders with Russia in case of a possible confrontation. If they attack, we must be ready. So we need more militaries at a high level of readiness, and that's not something that can be done overnight. And we'll need training, weapons, ammunition, anything else. Therefore, we're talking about 300,000 at a high level of readiness in total. NATO countries together with Finland and Sweden have about 3.5 million troops. Rattling sabers will not help. Sooner or later, Russia will complete its plans for its new northern military district, and NATO knows about it. NATO, the clown force, defeated by horseback riders from Afghani caves. Yeah, NATO doesn't have a good track record. Meanwhile, Blinken, who I say, this guy's a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. U.S. does not oppose Ukraine targeting Russian territory with U.S.-provided missiles. Now, if you were a Russian, how would you view that? U.S. does not oppose Ukraine targeting Russian territory with U.S.-provided missiles. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Sunday it was up to Ukraine whether or not to target Russian territory with U.S.-provided weapons, a policy that, of course, brings the U.S. and Russia closer to direct conflict. He made the comments after ABC reported, it's likely a Biden am will soon arm Ukraine with Army tactical missile systems, which have a range of up to 190 miles. Gee, do you think that has anything to do with Russia and North Korea agreeing to send these up to 500,000 troops in these missile systems the North Koreans have? Appearing on ABC, Blinken was asked if he was okay with Ukraine using his Army tactical missile system to hit target deep inside Russian territory. In terms of their targeting decision, it's their decision, not ours. I mean, this is unbelievably ridiculous. Unbelievably ridiculous. Meanwhile, Russia has ordered the expulsion of two U.S. embassy staff for links to a spy. They're going to be expelled for working with Robert Shonov, a former U.S. consulate worker accused by Moscow of spying. Well, you know, everyone knows the whole point of embassies and consulates is to gather information about the country where they're located. I mean, that's the whole idea in a broad sense. The whole point of having these embassies and consulates, or shall we say, among the most important reasons, because obviously there's the additional reason of facilitating correspondence between the leaders of the one nation and the leaders of the other, is to gather intelligence on the nation where they're located. Russia has said it's expelling two U.S. diplomats for allegedly liaising with a Russian national it accuses of collaborating with a foreign state. On Thursday, Russian authorities said two U.S. embassy staff would be expelled for working with Robert Shonov, a former U.S. consulate worker accused by Moscow of spying. The named people conducted illegal activity, maintained contact with Russian citizen Arshanov, accused of confidential cooperation with a foreign state, the Russian Foreign Ministry observed. What else is going on? Well, this is pretty interesting. Chairman of Joint Chiefs Mark Milley retiring at the end of the month. Ukraine? General Mark Milley, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is retiring at the end of the month. Quite a number of Pentagon staff seem to think this has to do with the utter failure of the Ukraine situation. One Pentagon officer said, rats are fleeing the sinking ship. In a signal as how unscheduled this retirement actually seemed to be, Milley told reporters he doesn't even know yet where he's going to live. Quipping, he has told his wife, we can go to Dick's Sporting Goods and get a tent. I'm good with that. We lived in a tent before. On their face, such words do not give the impression this was a long-planned retirement and gives credence to the notion that something unexpected is forcing the general out. In many people's minds, Ukraine losing to Russia is the obvious catalyst for Milley's rather sudden departure. I never cared for this guy, Milley. Nor does the author. He writes, this is Hal Turner. I'm not a fan of General Milley in any way. After the November 2020 presidential election, when Milley penned a letter, also signed by the rest of the Joint Chiefs, telling members of the armed service they would serve Joe Biden, despite what I saw as clear and obvious election fraud, which put Biden illegitimately into office, I thought Milley should have gone right then and there instead of defending the actual vote, which reelected Trump. Milley embraced the illegitimate Biden victory. It made me sick to my stomach. I agree. Once Biden was in, the whole Ukraine thing flared back up. It had quieted down to nothing during the administration of President Trump. Yet within weeks of his departure, war was back on the agenda in Ukraine. That agenda reached its peak in February of 2022 when Russia, having tried every diplomatic effort imaginable, had to send troops across the Ukrainian border to protect Russia from continued NATO expansion and from the placing of American missiles on Ukraine's soil. And as I've already explained, to protect the people of the Donbass from an imminent slaughter. So here we are, 19 months into the Russia special military operation to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine, and Russia is winning big. Even staunch NATO allies like Poland see the writing on the wall. Just yesterday, the Polish president said, Ukraine entering NATO out of the question now. The Ukraine fiasco is falling apart day by day, and there is no saving it. I suspect, but cannot prove, Hal Turner writes, that Milley was among the hawks pushing this Ukraine-Russia fiasco, perhaps deluded by his own propaganda. Milley never seemed to realize that Ukraine never stood a chance against Russia. Now that the Ukraine thing is falling apart, Milley is hightailing it into retirement. Good riddance. I could not agree more. Meanwhile, and this is a very disturbing development, probably the most important story I'm reporting today, G20 announces plan to impose digital currencies and IDs worldwide. G20 leaders have agreed to a plan to eventually impose digital currencies and digital IDs on their respective populations. The Epoch Times has a story. The leaders of the group of 20 nations have agreed to a plan to eventually impose digital currencies and digital IDs on their respective populations amid concern that governments might use them to monitor their people's spending and crush dissent. No kidding. The G20, which is made up of the world's leading rich and developing nation and is currently under India's presidency, adopted its final declaration on the subject over the weekend in New Delhi. The group announced last week they'd agreed to build the necessary infrastructure to implement digital currencies and IDs. But the group said discussions are already underway to create international regulation for cryptocurrencies. It claimed that there was no talk of banning cryptocurrency at the summit. Many critics are concerned that governments and central banks will eventually regulate cryptocurrencies and then immediately replace them with central bank digital currencies, which lack similar privacy and security. Critics say these proposals might allow government authorities to impose a social credit score system and decide how their citizens can spend their own money. Yes, that's the key right there. Do you want the government to control what you can spend or not spend, what you can buy or not buy, what you can do with your own hard-earned cash? They only take a disproportionate amount from you anyway in the form of taxes. But now if they want you to buy an electric vehicle, which is proven to be a calamity, limited range, long times to recharge, they'll burst into fire if they come into contact with salt water. The damage to the environment that is essential to their production, especially of their batteries, is overwhelmingly greater than the pollution caused by gas and oil. I mean, it's a self-defeating agenda. If you actually believe in protecting the environment, the last thing you want to do is go for electric vehicles. which, by the way, don't have the traction or power to pull loads. I mean, those who buy this F-150 Ford pickup, it's supposed to be the top of the line, find it can't pull a load. That the electric energy just won't cut it. At the summit, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen called for digital ID systems similar to COVID vaccine passports and for an international regulatory body for artificial intelligence. She called for the UN to have a role in AI regulation and called the European Union's COVID digital certificate a perfect model for digital public infrastructure, which would include digital IDs. So if you wanted to pull into a filling station and fill your tank with gas, they might cut you off. No, because they want you electric. They want you to sit for hours while you charge your battery. I mean, it's just insane. And of course, if you thought you were going to buy a firearm, a handgun, or a rifle, if the government has to approve, you're not going to be able to do it. Many of you are familiar with the COVID digital certificate, she says. The EU developed it for itself. The model was so functional and so trusted. 51 countries on four continents have adopted it for free. Today, we'll be right back.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
A dear friend who's a very smart guy, but who's been frequently subject to attack. I mean, as a targeted individual, electromagnetic attacks and the like. Where Dr. Catherine Horton has been leading the legal charge against it. And will, by the way, be among the speakers at my False Flags and Conspiracies 4th annual conference on the 16th and 17th of December, which is going to be free and open to the public, broadcast live, free and open to the public. So you might want to mark your calendar. I've got about 20 speakers lined up. These are good people. Free and open to the public. Right. Here's a quick summary of our current situation. For United States citizens, our central government, including the White House, the Pentagon, and all the intel and LE, law enforcement agencies and judiciary, has been infiltrated and hijacked by the Khazarian mafia globalists and has declared a secret war upon us. Their plan is to attack every single institution, destroy normality by creating chaos and loss everywhere. But this is not their primary goal, which is instead to mass murder us, all in progressive steps while they reduce the birth rate. Normally, one's military is unleashed to protect the people who pay the taxes that support the central government, intel, and military. But because of the major coup d'etat in 1963, with the assassination of JFK by George H.W. Bush and Op 40 of the company, covered up by the Bureau, and here we have a difference in emphasis, but it is true, that George H.W. Bush was on the ground. He was with General Edward Lansdale supervising the mechanics, the actual shooters on the ground, of whom there turned out to be 8, none of whom was named Lee Harvey Oswald, who was actually standing in the doorway of the book depository as a JFK motorcade passed by. Which means not only can he have not been the lone gunman, he cannot have been one of the multiple shooters in Dealey Plaza that day. Bush 1 was able to finish hijacking the U.S. government first by using the company, that's the CIA, to infiltrate and corrupt the Republican Party. Then, when he finished that task, he moved on to infiltrate and corrupt the Democrat Party through his close association with the Clintons down in Arkansas, using Barry Seal, Intermountain Aviation, and Rhodes Law for Moley North and the Enterprise, and ADFA for money laundering. So we are now in a situation where our central government has declared a secret war and mass death sentences on we the people. And our military has become part of this major operation dating back to 1913-14, when the Khazarian mafia money changers hijacked our money manufacturing and distribution system. This is by establishing a central bank, the Fed, and began converting it to fiat interest-bearing debt notes instead of gold and silver-backed money, which was completed in 1970 when Heinz Kissinger convinced Nixon to drop the gold and silver backing of the dollar and move to the petrodollar to win its role as the reserve currency for international transactions in oil, which is now, of course, being destroyed. Because of the sanctions on Russia, other nations saw what could happen to them if they engaged in politics to the dislike of the United States. They could have their economies cut out from under them, and therefore they have or are going to BRICS and abandoning the petrodollar, the calamitous consequences of which are only dimly perceived by the American people. He continues, "We are now being attacked using the Cloward and Piven principle by allowing the globalists to traffic in millions of illegals, overwhelm and destroy our economy and budget. While this happens, the top officials are allowing these crimes against we the people to proceed. They appear to be mesmerized and mass mind-controlled, a.k.a. hived, by the globalists." Here he's talking about the role of television and the news media to propagate falsehoods about the situation we're in that are reinforced repeatedly and tend to be believed by most. Some think an even spell had been placed upon them by their sins and turning away from God Almighty's laws. Our intel agencies in the Pentagon are making monstrous amounts of black, off-the-books, secret funding from illegal drug sales, illegal arms sales, and illegal child and human trafficking. Our intel and military won't protect us. The courts and judicial system have all been weaponized against us, captured by threats, human compromise, or accepted globalist belief systems. Our military has been ruined and will not, really, cannot protect us. Under international rules of war, our military and intel have the legal right to sanction, including terminate with extreme prejudice, means assassinate, any U.S. officials taking orders and performing acts of war against us while out of official foreign army uniform from any foreign power, in this case, the globalist New World Order crowd. The company has been doing this by issuing signed findings for many years. After JFK's assassination, POTUS, President of the United States, no longer had to sign the intel findings, but certain agencies could now do that themselves. Obviously, our military leaders and our top officials in D.C. are no longer following their oaths of office, which include an oath to the U.S. Constitution. But there's no one left to stop them. The public cannot, because these officials have weaponized intel, the U.S. Department of Justice and Judiciary, as well as a major mass media news cartel, and most of the social internet media against us all. If the masses had not turned away from God Almighty and his son Jesus, none of this would have happened. Now, he, of course, embraces religious beliefs that I, as an agnostic, do not share. He concludes, "May God Almighty please reach down and help us, because, as is obvious by now, the U.S. government will not, because it has become the main perp here today in our nation." It is rather stunning that should be the case. I thus turn to, what a coincidence. Potential RFK Jr. assassin had the same name as El Chapo's wife, was released from federal prison the day before. And here we got a photograph of the alleged assassin, Adrian Paul Espiro, and right, Emma Cornell Espiro. The potential assassin who was stopped by RFK Jr. security has been identified. His name is Adrian Paul Espiro, A-I-S-P-U-R-O, 44. Keep in mind, this incident happened on Thursday, September 14th, and the potential assassin had a U.S. Marshal's badge. One day earlier, September 13th, Mexican cartel leader El Chapo's wife was released from federal prison. We can confirm Emma Cornell Espiro released from custody of Federal Bureau of Prisons today, September 13th. Into the rabbit hole. And this is Sundance, a conservative treehouse. A pretty smart guy. Now, I'm not saying they are related. I'm not even saying there were any connection between them. However, think about the way the U.S. government, CIA, carries out domestic associations using unwitting patsies. If RFK Jr. had been assassinated, Adrian Paul Espiro would be the perfect patsy. Here are quotes from the New York Post. Espiro's brother Raymond, who dropped him off at the event, was also briefly detained, said the entire matter was a misunderstanding, and that his brother, an unemployed emergency medical technician, had been told there was a security job for him there. On July 31st, Adrian posted a threatening and incoherent TikTok video in which his gun and fake marshal's badge were prominently on display. Assume some federal agency, CIA, intercepted or saw the video. Then, several months later, the three-letter agency organized a security job. Espiro put him in the vicinity of RFK Jr. The feds conduct the hit. Adrian Espiro, complete with gun and fake badge, is picked up and identified as the assassin. The plausible side-eye motive is then placed on El Chapo's crew, getting back at the U.S. for M. Espiro's incarceration. Alternatively, of course, it could be El Chapo, you know, paying off the U.S. government for releasing his wife, instructed by them that the price would be to take out RFK Jr. Robert W. Malone, a very sophisticated guy at MD, has published the consequences of government weaponization, including denying RFK's Secret Service protection. I published this piece on my blog at jameshfetzer.org. It's much longer than the parts I'm going to share. They claim Kennedy baselessly suggested the Biden administration was singling him out for rare treatment and said Kennedy's statement about the denial of protection was highly misleading. Ironically, CNN, reporting the story, misleads its readers by stating Kennedy's suggestion that he's being treated differently than every other presidential candidate since 1968 is baseless. By scanning this, which CNN chose to ignore, you can decide if RFK Jr. is being treated differently than past presidential candidates. And here they go on with, I don't know, 16 or more cases. Check this out. 1968, just days after Senator Robert Kennedy, RFK Jr.'s father, was assassinated at a campaign event, The sitting admin provided Secret Service protection to 5 candidates. And by the end of the year, 12 were protected by the Secret Service. 1980, Carter admin provided early Secret Service protection to rivals Ronald Reagan, John B. Connally, George Bush, Philip M. Crane, Howard H. Braker, 663 days before the election. Carter admin provided early Secret Service to Senator Edward Kennedy, 441 days prior to the election, even before he had announced his candidacy. 1984, Reagan admin provided early Secret Service protection for Jesse Jackson, 362 days before election, offered early to rivals Walter Mondale, John Glenn, Reuben Askew, Gary Hart, Ernest Hollings, George McGovern, all 297 days before the election, 1988. The Reagan admin provided early protection for Pat Robertson, 343 days before the election for Jesse Jackson, 351 for Governor Michael Dukakis soon thereafter, 1992. The Bush admin provided early protection for Bill Clinton, 249 days before the election, 1996. The Clinton admin provided early protection for Pat Buchanan, 251 days before, and Bob Dole, 219 before. 2000 election, the Clinton admin afforded early protection to George W. Bush, 221 days before the election, 2004. Bush admin afforded early Secret Service protection to John Kerry, 256 days before the election, and soon thereafter for John Edwards, 2008. Bush admin provided early Secret Service protection for Barack Obama, 551 days before the election, despite not meeting the polling criteria that RFK Jr. has met, despite not having any specific credible threat against him, unlike RFK Jr. The Bush admin also provided early Secret Service for rival John McCain, 195 days before 2012. Obama admin provided early Secret Service protection for rivals Herman Cain, 355 days before Newt Gingrich, 245 days before Mitt Romney, 279 days before Rick Santorum, 254 days before 2016 election. The Obama admin provided early Secret Service protection for Donald Trump and Ben Carson, 369 days before the 2016 election for Bernie Sanders, 279 days, 2020. The Trump admin provided early Secret Service protection for rival Joe Biden, 231 days before the election. Among all these past administrations, going back to the Johnson admin in 1968, only the Biden administration has ever denied a formal protection request, now two of them, from a presidential candidate. No media story has found even one other instance in which a candidate was turned down. With regard to the frequent media assertion candidates don't receive protection until 120 days before the election, the list above tells a whole story. Every candidate listed received Secret Service protection long before 120 days from election. But stop, listen, and think for a moment. This is not just an instance in the timeline of incredibly corrosive events we've observed over the last 3 years, events that have gradually, incrementally shredded the warp and fabric of our own civil society. If there's anything which defines conservatism, it is a belief and commitment to the importance of maintaining civil society while enabling gradual incremental change as needed to adapt to new conditions. The maturity and functionality of a constitutional republic such as ours is completely dependent on mutually respectful commitment to civil behavior and discourse, which includes a commitment to the physical safety of our opponents. As a tribal balkanization of American society now reached a point where we no longer respect the very lives of our opponents, no. What's happened is we have a crime family masquerading as a political administration in Washington, D.C., a crime family. And they're acting like a bunch of mobsters and goons. They would love for something to happen to RFK Jr. And I don't think in my lifetime I've seen a case where it was more obvious a candidate was going to be targeted for assassination than RFK Jr. Bobby was betrayed by one of his own who had him leave by way of the pantry, where he was shot behind the right ear by a security guard accompanying him from an inch and a half, using the same type of revolver as Sirhan Sirhan was firing off as a form of distraction while Bobby was being assassinated. Not a Sirhan bullets, it's Bobby. But the security guard shot him from an inch and a half behind the right ear. As he was falling, continued to fire. Three more shots, two of which actually pierced his body, one of which only went through his jacket. And as he was falling, he grabbed his tie. And in some of the photographs, you can see his tie clasp on the floor of the pantry. As Bobby lies there dying. He was a great American. He was a great human being. I would have gladly given my life for either Jack or Bobby. I think in some ways I admired Bobby even more than I did Jack. The Kennedy family has given so much. And what do we have in office here today? Biden deliberately inviting illegal invasion of America. After 33 months in office, Joe Biden invited 8 million illegal immigrants to invade our southern border. He hired Cuban immigrant Alejandro Mayorkas to make sure our borders are open, free to access 24/7. And he rewards criminals, drug dealers, sex traffickers, terrorists with plane rides or bus tickets to any city in America. For the life of me. And this is Frosty Wooldridge writing in rants. For the life of me, why haven't the American people been screaming at the top of their lungs to impeach Biden and sidekick Mayorkas? Does anyone in America, black, white, or brown, understand that everything we take for granted as to the rule of law, citizenship and a decent job with decent pay, are all being destroyed by this invasion of our homeland? Even moronic leaders like Mayor Adams of New York City cries out as 110,000 illegal migrants invade the Big Apple. Chicago morphs into a third world city. Los Angeles degrades into a homeless nightmare for 70,000 drug addicts and dead people. And yet, Biden lies like a thief as to what's happening to our country with his severe decline. He doesn't possess a clue as to what's happening. He looks like a cadaver puppet, walks like one. Someone is pulling his strings. History will dig into his messy life without mercy. My longtime friend Bob Dane, executive director, retired at the Federation of American Immigration Reform, spoke to me as to what we face. Here is what he said. Frank Capra understood and cherished America, captured its spirit vividly in the movies he directed, including the iconic Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and It's a Wonderful Life. His largest contribution to the nation he loved was a series of 7 Why We Fight documentaries made between 1942 and 1945, each explained for active duty troops and the public at large Why America was at war and the broad principles for which it was fighting. Today, Americans' challenge is closer to home, and turning the tide on America's current border crisis involves an entirely different type of citizen effort: public education, civil engagement, lobbying lawmakers, and voting. The similarity is that our current fight for true immigration reform is also grounded in values and principles. With national elections looming, many state legislatures return to session. Here's some reasons why. As a sovereign nation, America has the right and responsibility to protect its borders, territorial integrity, identity, and assets, to maintain national security, public safety, social and economic stability, and cultural cohesion. America has the right to limit immigration levels, to preserve jobs for its citizens, protect wages, maintain quality health care and education, and ensure the sustainability of social services and precious natural resources. The rule of law is the bedrock of our democracy, and our immigration laws are no exception. American citizens have a right for their voices to be heard in all policy decisions that affect them. Special interests must never be allowed to dictate the terms of public policy. Immigration must serve the broad national interest now and for future generations. Unfortunately, it ain't the case anymore. I'll be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This immigration thing is such a monstrous threat, unlike any I've ever experienced in my lifetime. I want to continue with the observation of Bob Dane, executive director, retired of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. He continues, "Unfortunately, these principled and aspirational building blocks for sensible policies are always substituted for self-serving arguments by special interests peddling mass migration, ignored by mainstream media and often lost in the gyration and noise of legislative activity." He means substituted by self-serving arguments. "Even for the most ardent activists, it's early to lose sight of the big picture, given the blitzkrieg of immigration issues occurring more rapidly in every facet of society, with so many fires to put out." The fight continues, and it may be a sustained one as long as mass immigration is permitted to fatten the electorate for power-hungry political parties, or provide an exploitable labor pool for unscrupulous employers, or, as long as we lose sight of what's at stake, moreover, changing administration often results in one step forward, one step back. Executive power utilized productively under the previous president to uphold the law has boomeranged, as this president has abused it to dismantle most interior and perimeter enforcement. Such whipsawing of our issue with each successive administration may worsen as our nation's political divide widens. Recognizing that, we can never be content that mission accomplished is defined as a 4-year period in which gains are made only to be subsequently lost. When is the job done? Perhaps when the principles behind fair, practical, and immigration controls that preserve our sovereignty and advance America's interests become normative, enshrined, and immutable public values, durable enough to withstand political vicissitudes and transcend ideology. It's a lofty goal, but worth a fight. After all, we have a nation to save. Yes. We have a nation to save. It's rather intriguing, by the way, that a new story today reports that there's a major development in Texas. Catch this. Inside Colony Ridge, the fastest growing development in the U.S., a magnet for illegal immigrants. A Texas land developer has established a sprawling settlement north of Houston where thousands of illegal immigrants are believed to have settled raising concerns among experts and elected officials that development 400 miles in the interior of the United States could become a strategic asset for cartels. By the way, let me observe. It would be very, very simple to solve these problems by adopting immigration policies like those of Mexico, two of which are telling. First, in order to migrate, to qualify for immigration into Mexico, you must be able to demonstrate you have something to contribute to the good of Mexico, such as by being a doctor, a lawyer, a plumber, a carpenter. It ought to be the case that in order to immigrate into the United States, you must be able to show you have something to contribute to the good of the United States. Doctor, lawyer, plumber, carpenter. Second, in order to migrate into Mexico, you must demonstrate that you have the financial resources to support you and your family members coming with you, lest you become a burden on the state of Mexico. How obvious! Thus, it ought to be the case that, in addition to having to demonstrate you have something to contribute to the good of the United States, you must be able to demonstrate you have the financial resources to support yourself and your family members, lest you become a burden upon the state. We're getting riffraff from everywhere. Ne'er-do-wells, drug dealers, rapists, killers, people who are just poor, coming to sponge off the United States. American taxpayer, the quality of our lives is being diluted, really dismembered. Civil society is falling apart under the impact of the deliberate policies of the Biden admin. And I have a video showing these convoys headed toward the border with hundreds and hundreds of migrants in each convoy. And on the doors of the trucks is a Star of David. The Star of David. So what about what's going on in Texas? Located in Liberty County, Texas, near the small town of Plum Grove, the Colony Ridge Development is a sprawling community that, based on an analysis of publicly available information, is now over 60 square miles and nearly the size of the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Its population is estimated to be anywhere between 50 to 75,000. And growing rapidly thanks to a marketing plan targeted at Texas Hispanic population. The Daily Wire surveyed the development by helicopter to assess the true extent of the growth. The flight began in a wealthy Woodlands neighborhood, but it was only minutes before the designer homes and pools gave way to half-built homes, dilapidated trailers, and heaps of trash. Houses on the ground fly the flags of foreign countries, and many homes display their addresses on spray-painted pieces of plywood. Many structures, some of which are not hooked up to running water, were under construction. Others were unfinished, but didn't appear to be actively getting worked upon. At least one plot didn't have any structure at all, just a tent in the corner nestled between shrubs. Stray dogs without collars could be seen trotting along the side of the underdeveloped streets. But despite what appears to be poor living conditions throughout much of the development, Colony Ridge is exploding. The view from the sky revealed a sprawling labyrinth of roundabouts and endless rows of sidewalkless streets with empty plots, waiting to be developed. The edges of the property are dotted with construction vehicles, each one tasked with cutting and clearing the surrounding forest to make room for yet more growth. A calculated performance based on acreage and lot data provided on the Colony Ridge website for each of their six subdivisions found it was already more than 60 square miles bigger than major southern cities such as Fayetteville, Arkansas, and Asheville, North Carolina. Colony Ridge, owned and operated by developer William Trey Harris, is rapidly expanding, at least in part due to a financing arrangement that makes it possible for illegal aliens to buy land deep in the heart of Texas. While traditional financing methods require credit rating and proof of income, Todd Bensman, a national security fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies, told the Daily Wire, buyers at Colony Ridge are able to circumvent the usual requirements, even dodging the need to provide a social security number. Because with a traditional bank loan, you need to be able to show you have a credit rating and proof of income. Buyers at Colony Ridge are asked to pay as little as a few hundred dollars as down payment. The loan is directly from the developer, bypassing traditional mortgages. And while the buyer might pay interest rate near 15%, it's a great deal for someone with no other option to buy land in the county. Doing business as Terranos Houston, which translates to Houston land, the company appears to market its property entirely in Spanish, telling prospective buyers they can own land in the United States. An advertisement posted on the Instagram grain per Terranos Houston appears to target those who are either not currently living in the U.S. or are not citizens of the country. The caption of the post written in Spanish probably translates to still renting, own land in the United States. Now, hey, that's just one story. What the hell is going on? The whole situation is a calamity. One further story I want to share. The end of the show. Speaker Kevin McCarthy Tuesday announced the House of Representatives would open a formal impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden. The inquiry comes comically late, as Biden's rampant corruption has been evident for years. But it's nice when Republicans at least pretend to fight the left. The inquiry is unlikely to go anywhere, despite Biden's obvious guilt. And if the Republicans were any form of serious political opposition, they would be using their formal power of the purse to defund the administration partisan and malicious abuse of agencies like the FBI. While impotent half measures from GOP leaderships are unsurprising, the far more interesting aspect of this news cycle is a response from the left and its media lickspittles. Shortly after McCarthy announced the impeachment inquiry, the White House rushed out a memo to the press instructing them to increase scrutiny they were applying to the charges. The amazing thing was watching how quickly and blatantly the press complied with the order in real time. After the memo's release, media outlets reported on these instructions from the Biden admin as if they were breaking news. Outlets, including CNN, NBC, and Axios, dutifully echoed the sentiments of the letter from the White House while reporting about it. Politico's Heidi Prisbola followed her announcement of the memo's existence with a Twitter thread that fact-checked the claims of the inquiry, just as the admin had ordered her to do. Neoconservative and Trump derangement syndrome patient David Frum eagerly retweeted the threat, not to be outdone. CNN, despite having just revealed that the White House had ordered reporters to attack the impeachment inquiry, produce its own fact check to comply with the demands of the regime. There is a good argument to be had over whether a free press has ever really held government power in check. But today, that assertion is beyond laughable. In 2019, I learned about the political theorist Curtis Yarvin and his concept of the cathedral, which is a way to model the decentralized network of prestige, influence, and information that drives the political will of our current regime since then. I have dedicated a large amount of time to explain how that system works and how the right can use that model to understand the manner in which power is wielded. Under Yarvin's model, power does not reside primarily in the formal organs of government, but rather in the story that informs the values of our ruling class. University is a core formative experience that all ruling elites share, and those prestigious schools shape the morality and worldview of every person who enters the halls of power. Journalists do not see themselves as neutral arbiters of truth, but as zealous crusaders against injustice, who reinforce the narrative they learned at university with every stroke of their pen. The functionaries who fill government bureaucracies, moreover, do not see themselves as servants of the average voter, but as transformative agents whose purpose is to engineer the deplorables of red America into compliant progressive cultists. The university grads who populate the management of every Fortune 500 country do not see themselves as businessmen, but as representative of racial justice and equity. This shared value system means that while there's no formal government propaganda apparatus in the United States, not quite true, let me add, all of the country's major institutions, both public and private, end up pursuing the same goals and spouting the same platitudes. While this distributed network of influence was less efficient than an explicit organ of state propaganda, it had some distinct advantages. Change was slower, but also felt more organic. People were more likely to feel that social attitudes, which were being pushed from on high, were actually emergent from the shifting tastes of the popular will. Maintaining this kind of soft power is very difficult, requiring a high degree of skill and subtlety, but it has also proven far more resilient than more direct methods of propaganda. In a system where popular sovereignty is the only acceptable, legitimate mechanism of government power, control of public opinion is key. The left's hegemony over mass media and education provide all the tools necessary to insert ideas into the popular consciousness and wait patiently, nudging and prodding when necessary, until the people believe that this is what they wanted all along. Manufacturing consent without setting off alarm bells can be a delicate balancing act. But if a ruling class can pull it off, they have one of the most stable power structures ever conceived. While detailing this system has been a major focus of my work, it also seems to have been a bit of a waste because the regime has decided to throw it into the trash bin. There is nothing subtle or delicate about the White House handing out explicit marching orders in public and the press falling all over itself to see who can comply first. No one needs a complicated theory of decentralized coordination when the elites are announcing their collusion in public. Now, to be clear, there is still some value in understanding how the old system worked. There are still many ideas and attitudes that the elite attempt to pass through their soft power network against which the right should be on guard. Also, the flow of power is not as obvious now as it may seem. The press, gives the Biden administration orders just as often, if not more, than the White House gives orders to journalists. Which has become blindingly obvious, however, is that the ability of our elite to wield soft power is failing, and they have, in many cases, stopped going through the motions entirely. There are a number of different factors contributing to the collapse of total narrative control by a ruling elite. The internet, while granting our evil overlords all kinds of terrible tools, is fundamentally an agent of decentralization. It breaks the monopoly of mass media that was once held by a tightly controlled network of television stations, news broadcasts, and movie studios. While opposing voices can be and are regularly banned from major platforms, new dissident voices and outlets seem to emerge twice as quickly as they can be silenced. Despite the ludicrous amount of censorship regularly applied at venues like Twitter, the truth has a nasty habit of getting out. The rapidly declining quality of our ruling elite is another matter. Subtlety, nuance, and patience are key factors necessary for the maintenance of soft power. The legitimacy of institutions, experts, and narratives must be accumulated slowly and guarded carefully. The sophisticated elite wields soft power with a high degree of self-control. It is not for irate toddlers who wish to crush their enemies tomorrow. But our system is selected for conformity and compliance, not for intellect or discipline. Progressives have always been deconstructionists, but at least they used to produce thought-provoking works of art. Now all they're capable of is endless social justice sermons masquerading as comic book movie sequels. Our elites have managed to degenerate to unthinkable depths while spontaneously becoming more confident of the right to rule than any group in history. No wonder that they have gotten sloppy and obvious. We are in an interesting moment when ruling elites, once relied on the subtlety and finesse of soft power, become entirely incapable of operating the system their more talented predecessors established. We have lived our lives watching a show, the pantomime of a political process put on by those who sought to hide the real exercise of power. That is a scary thing to realize, but also creates opportunities that did not previously exist. The comforting function of a free press that holds politicians accountable, or a public-private distinction that limits government power, simply cannot survive when it has become blindingly obvious due to the incompetence of our leaders. While elites will continue to put on the show for a while longer, their narrative control is slipping, and that creates new opportunities, both great and terrible, for our future. Just to give you an example of what the hell is going on, I put up a post on Twitter that was censored. Get this. For those who are unaware, Joan Rivers died not long after she had revealed that Barack Obama is gay and that Michelle is a tranny. Here her daughter explains why she thinks they may have been responsible for her mother's death. It would not surprise me. And I got a note from Twitter. Hi, James H. Wetzer. Your post was detected by our systems and has had its visibility limited for violating the X rule specifically. We have determined your post violated our rule against hateful conduct. You may not promote violence against, threaten, or harass other people on the basis of race, ethnicity, national origin, sexual orientation, gender, gender identity, religious affiliation, age, disability, or serious disease. I was doing none of that. Listen to a bit to Joan Rivers' daughter.
So wrong on so many levels. And it actually strikes fear in me that somehow, someday, somewhere, that will get out.
I went through 5 different security passes, and then a woman at the gate who will not recheck into their records says to me, "You cannot go on." No, she is a moron. Just calm down.
Got it.
No, Michelle is a tranny.
I'm sorry, she's a what?
A transgender.
In my opinion, it was 100% preventable.
What did this guy know about Obama? Did he know that Michelle Obama was maybe Michael Obama? Did they know that maybe former president-elect Obama was having relations with a man?
Behind the curtains of power and prestige, untold stories often can send shivers down our spines. In a shocking revelation that shakes the very foundations of political intrigue, Joan Rivers' daughter unveils a conspiracy that hints at a chilling possibility, the Obama's involvement in her mother's mysterious demise. In a world where truth is stranger than fiction, join us as we delve into the enigmatic circumstances surrounding Joan Rivers' passing and explore the intriguing connections that could suggest a startling truth. Buckle up as we journey into the heart of a story that intertwines celebrity, politics, and the unimaginable, leaving us to question everything we thought we knew. A recent conspiracy regarding...
Very, very good. I published it on Twitter, even though it's been partially limited. Just click on it twice, and you'll be able to watch the whole thing. We'll take your calls right after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Paul, welcome to the show. Join the conversation. Your thoughts?
I was going to say, so what the hell is this show about? pardon me. You covered a lot of ground. I want to key on one phrase, though, among so many others. But right before the break, you were reading something, and you talked about the incompetence of our leaders. And I think you know that that's not really true. These are people that are put in position, and they're doing their job. They're doing what they're told to do, more or less. Maybe some of them really believe it. Others probably do not. But it doesn't matter because they're getting paid. They love the position. You know, they love the, in many cases, the publicity. And they don't care about the rest of us. You know,
I agree completely. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So one of the stories I was listening intermittently as I was involved in conversation with some other people here in real life, as they say, but you talked about some development in Houston or outside of Houston. I forget the name of it, where, you know, promising foreigners like land or something. What the heck's the name of that?
Yeah. Let me pull it up here. Give me one second. I got it lined up for further discussion on
just a formality.
Inside, it's called Colony Ridge, and it's a sprawling settlement north of Houston. Yeah, Colony Ridge. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, what's happening is, you know, I've made clear, and I know you don't really dispute it, although sometimes you quibble with the manner of my presentation of some of these issues. Because I tend to go a little bit, shall we say, coarse and racist. But in the end, you know, we have to be, or we're just not going to survive. This is going to go on generation after generation until we're basically extinguished. In other words, with our low birth rate, right, with the high birth rates of the non-white foreigners, right, that don't give a damn about us. And I recently had an experience which just tells me that. In other words, they view people like us as like these older gringos who are like part of the past. You know, we're dinosaurs. We just have to go. And of course, our progeny, if we have any, are not reproducing at the same rates that our parents and grandparents did. Okay. It's just, I mean, the street that I grew up on, again, where, you know, the family home is going to be sold shortly. That used to be, when we moved in there in the 70s, it was almost all white families with children. I mean, there was a couple of houses that maybe were maybe an older couple, and there was one black family, for example, you know, a middle-class black family. But every other family was white families with children, and we had five children. There was a family up the street that had six. There was another family next door that had three, and so on and so on and so on. And now you go to that street right now, and there's literally only two or three white families with children. We're talking about one or two children, okay? So the writing is on the wall unless we get pissed off and take over. And what they're counting on is that we don't have the balls to do the dirty work necessary. And we know what dirty work that is. We have to be willing to wipe some people out. And I'm just telling you like it is. When I see these images of these foreigners coming across the Rio Grande or wherever, for years I've had this urge, I just want to machine gun them. Okay. When I see these boatloads of fucking Negroids coming across the Mediterranean to Italy and all the places, I just have the normal, natural urge to wipe them out. That's what would have taken place back in the day when we were like swords and shields and spears, right, with the Greeks and the Romans and, you know, all the other civilizations that have come and gone. That's what would have occurred to these invading foreigners. But now they're basically being subsidized. They're being given money and food vouchers and and free phones. Okay, this is a slow war of attrition, but it's a war nonetheless. And I speak in the kind of terms that unfortunately are necessary. You know, nobody really wants to be put in this position, but we're being shoved into a corner. And whether we take care of, like, the government or the people behind us, this Jewish conspiracy, the Kalergi plan on steroids, whether we take care of them or not, we still have to contend with millions upon millions upon millions of non-white foreigners that don't give a damn about us or our race, and we have nothing in common with. I swear to God, Jim, I can't stand people that talk about, oh, assimilation or the Constitution or any of this other nonsense. I have no interest in, and I don't have anything in common with all these Indians coming here, all these Chinese by the millions, all these Mexicans coming here. They are not us. They are not Americans. I don't care how much they take the oath of citizenship.
Well, okay, Paul, I agree completely. It's an invasion. It's an invasion. This should not be allowed to take place. This is an act of treason. The consequences are going to be horrendous. Hang in there while we bring in Brian to join us. Brian, go ahead. Give us your thoughts, too.
What Paul was talking about, it reminded me of reading about the Spanish Armada when they sailed for England. And they hit the storms, and a lot of those crew members of those Spanish galleons had to swim to shore, and they weren't welcomed. The English did exactly what he's talking to. In fact, I used to date a girl from Ireland who was termed Black Irish, and she was one of the few that had a Spanish ancestor because a few of them managed to survive and procreate. And she was stunningly beautiful and, you know, very dark complected and whatnot. And she kind of explained, you know, this was something I wasn't aware of before she explained all this to me. So it was something that was kind of in her psyche. And for Paul, I was driving around Saturday here in Kansas City, and I saw a little sign that said Jewish Ethnic Festival coming up. And I thought, I need to tell Paul about this. I'll tell him to bring lots of shekels because the bagel samples will cost money. They won't be free. So, Paul, just so you know, we've got it going on here.
Well, you know, I do enjoy a toasted bagel now and then with a schmear, you know, a garlic herb schmear or a salmon schmear. Yeah, you know. Yeah. Well, you know, I may have mentioned this before on the air, Jim, but it's worth bringing it up again. You know, what our history is, our history of violent racism, okay, in California, no less. I was not aware of it. But there was an exhibit that my brother saw, and he told me about it. I think it was down in Monterey or Salinas. And along with the exhibit, it also listed a little narrative, a little tutorial of all the other incidents like it that had occurred in California with so-called Chinatowns, okay? Because when the Chinese first started coming here with whatever, you know, the gold rush, the railroads, whatever, the Chinese were coming. And we, like us white people, white Californians, we used to burn them down. It was like more than a one or two incident thing. It was a pattern where these Chinese would build their own little settlements, their own little communities. So they were known as Chinatowns. And some people would just get pissed. They go, oh, you know, we don't need this. We don't want it. We've had enough of it. And they would burn them to the ground. And like I said, this is unfortunately what's going to sooner or later have to occur in some measure if we're going to resist our own colonization, which I believe we have the right to do. Because one thing for sure, if you have eyes to see, and I've lived here in California for the majority of my life, they will not stop coming. The Chinese, the Indians, the Vietnamese now. The Vietnamese population in San Jose is just overwhelming. You can walk around or take public transportation or whatever you do, and you are more than likely hear on any given day Vietnamese being spoken by people that, in my opinion, should not be here, right? The Vietnam War was, what, 50 years ago? 50 years. So why is it that we have Vietnamese here not speaking English? It's because they still continue to come. Just like the Chinese continue to come, the Indians, the Mexicans, they will not stop unless we stop them. And they're not going to be you know, deterred because of the fact that the government has taken their side against us. So anyway, yeah.
Brian, I imagine you agree with Paul on this by and large.
Absolutely. It goes back to our DNA. In the past, we protected our DNA. Because when you pollute your DNA, then your soul, you know, when it comes time to incarnate, can incarnate at a high level. You don't get people like you, me, and Paul that understand things. You get those people that don't know what the hell's going on. And that's the purpose of everything. And I really learned that from the American Indians, because where I live, I know you guys think it's crazy, but my third eye works really good. My telepathy works good. And there's American Indians around here everywhere. I've even had a woman that I'm in her kitchen and we're talking and she said, I don't know what it is, but I just see Indians around here all the time. And I said, my God, I see them too. And what they explained to me is the fact that when an Indian baby was born, the medicine man for the tribe would determine the energy level of that soul. And a higher energy level soul would end up being the chief or the medicine man, or in the case of a female, they had a female chief. And that's why your Indian chiefs wore the elaborate headdress. It's part of nature. The males in nature that have the elaborate plumage to attract females get the females. And so that's part of why they were the way they were, and they protected their DNA, and the DNA of the offspring through genetics that was of a higher level soul, they became the chiefs. So they're trying to make all Indians. We aren't going to have a lot of chiefs when this keeps going.
Yes. Paul. I mean,
yeah,
I think we all agree this is we're confronted with a catastrophe.
Yeah, and there's only one. Here
you got Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban says bringing back Donald Trump is the only way to end the Ukraine war. He may have it right. I mean, that sounds.
Well, that may or may not be true, but again, we're facing much bigger problems than, you know, whether Donald Trump is in office or not. And by the way, I can send you a clip from a video I watched where Jim, I'm sure, and of course, Brian and members of the audience have all heard that famous clip of Joe Biden where, you know, he's talking about nonstop, right? That he wants these non-white foreigners to continue to come, right? I mean, we've all heard it. Well, Donald Trump in a clip, okay, is actually saying the same thing. This is either back when he was running or when he was actually already president, where he says that he wants immigration in larger numbers than we've ever had before. This is words out of Trump's own mouth. So again,
why? What possible rationale?
Exactly, Jim. That's the point. There's no reason. As I have said many times, and there's a guy that used to be a regular co-host on Stormfront, and he said something way back when, I don't know, what, 14, 15, 16, right around in there, that I burned in my brain, and I remember it, and to me, it's obviously true. He said this: no white country derives any benefit from non-white immigration. And I remember, okay, you know, is that like 100% true? Is it 90% true? It doesn't really matter. You know, it's essentially true, okay? No white country derives any benefit from non-white immigration. And the reason is we can do everything we need to do ourselves, and we always have. As Adam Carolla pointed out on a podcast way back when I used to listen to his podcast, and he was never explicitly racist and he was never explicitly pro-white like a white nationalist, but he made all the points. He made all he basically embraced that narrative, and he showed some photographs one time because people were always talking about, oh, the immigrants are doing all these jobs and they're doing the jobs in many cases Americans don't want to do, blah, blah, blah. And he found all these photos from like when the Brooklyn Bridge was built and all these other construction projects. And all you saw was a bunch of white guys, or poor whites and blacks. That's who's always done the manual labor before we had this invasion, is whites and blacks. But we have all the labor that we're ever going to need. And, of course, we build and invent everything. I mean, you've ever been around a group of guys and there's some kind of problem needs to be solved. It could be something mechanical, something needs to be fixed, something needs to be done. And, you know, Jim, you probably have this experience, Brian as well. There's maybe a small group of guys, but there's always one or two guys that are worth something. Everybody else is watching. Okay? Everybody else is like, oh yeah, okay. And they might help in, but there's always that one guy or that one or two guys that kind of takes over, knows what they're doing, and gets the situation handled. Well, that's the white race. Okay, that is the white race. We historically have been the bringers of civilization. It's been covered in many books. One of them, of course, is March of the Titans, okay, the history of the white race. And, you know, it just makes clear over and over again, this is what we are, this is who we are. And that's why everybody wants to come and live in a white country, because we have an advanced standard of living that in many cases they couldn't do themselves. And when you go and you look at these cities in different parts of the world, right, especially Africa, but also many parts of Asia, and you look at what they have, concrete, steel, running water, electricity, all that is white people, white people, white people, white people. They wouldn't have done it, and they more than likely couldn't have done it without us. And so now, because we're the biggest opposition to this world Jewish control of a one world slave system where everybody's got a number and can't do a thing, can't buy anything or sell anything or take a breath of air without being monitored and surveilled and taxed. Well, we're the only true opposition to that, in my opinion. Okay, we're the only people with the know-how and the determined will that have done it in the past, that have beat these people in the past. And unfortunately, we're at the position now where we have to beat them again. And I mean that figuratively and literally. Because it's the only thing they understand is to have their ass beat. You know, it's just the way it is. Okay, I didn't make the world, but there are some people, Jim, as you know, they don't get it. It's like that famous footage we've all seen now of those Indian guys beating that black man in their 7-Eleven with a stick. Okay, he was all big bluster, pretending he had a gun, throwing all the items he was stealing into a trash barrel, all big, tough, intimidating black criminal until they started beating his ass with a stick, and then he whimpered and whined like a little baby. Okay, and that's what we need to do metaphorically as white people. We need to start kicking everybody's ass again. And I get pissed off when I don't see or feel from my fellow whites the same attitude. Okay, it makes me very both frustrated and a little depressed, because I just see too many people that are just soft. They're just soft. They're afraid they're going to hurt other people's feelings. F that.
Yeah. Brian.
Well, he's spot on, but as I've said, we're at the end of that 26,000-year cycle. We have the central sun of the galaxy here now that's pouring in all this light, and it, what that light does is it wakes people up, and it's here till August of 2025, and everything he's hoping and praying for, it's coming. They're going to wake up, Paul. I'm not one bit worried about it, and I'm wondering if it's not the September 23rd thing I talked about with you, Jim, in the last show. Because was it this morning or yesterday on the internet again, I find another link to September 23rd and you know, just like the other one. And so there's something going on that the dark have planned for September 23rd, and possibly it'll blow back and we'll get what he wants then. So
what is it about the date of the 23rd, Brian, that's significant?
Well, I don't know, but it's like September 11th. You know, we had all those signs of September 11th, you know, in the movies showing us, you know, and like at the Vatican, they've got the IX, which is Roman numeral 9, then Mother Mary, and then XI, which is 11. You had 9-11 everywhere. Well, they pointed out that there's 9-23 everywhere. Ghostbusters, some movie, Julia, Third Rock from the Sun, Big Bang Theory, all these TV and movies. There were 33 examples which using 33 examples is telling in itself. Okay. But so something's coming September 23rd, possibly.
Okay. Take a deep breath. We have a caller from 917. Area code, please join the conversation. Give us your first name and state.
Well, I think you know me by now. This is Reese from New York.
Pleased to hear from you, Reese. Yeah.
Hey, listen, let me just say at the outset, I agree wholeheartedly with Paul, with what he said a little while ago. And here's what it was, and I'm going to qualify it. He says, we white ethnic Europeans need to start speaking out unapologetically. In other words, not tiptoeing through it. We've got to be brash and unapologetic in standing up for ourselves, our ethnic pride, and that we're fed up with these mestizos and other immigrants destroying what we have built. Now, I'm going to tell you why, Jim, because right away, most people would say, oh, he must just be an angry white guy and he just wants to vent his anger. No, that's not it. Because I happen to be an expert in mind control and particularly double mind programming and cognitive dissonance. And America is under mass cognitive dissonance. I won't go into it now. That's for a discussion for another day. But I can tell you from somebody who's an expert, I deprogram people that are in cults. Americans are cognitive dissonant. One of the best exercises for Americans right now is to start speaking out and just saying it, not. You know how people always will first say, you know, I'm not a racist, but you've got to stop saying that. You've got to start speaking out in a way that shows other people and yourself that you have self-respect, you have self-worth, and you're proud of your race and its achievements. And on top of that, you're calling out what I refer to as the lesser races. You know, whatever you want to say, you can call me what you want, but they have not achieved what we have throughout the millennia. Which is clear if you look at the Aztecs or the Africans or the Aborigines or the Native American Indians, et cetera. They may be nice people, and I'm not calling for them to be rounded up and genocided, but I'm saying they can't hold a candle to the achievements of the European, who, by the way, has been a blessing to these people. We have brought our modern civilization, our hospitals, our technology, our building of cities that we've done throughout the ages, and we've brought it to these other groups and blessed them with it. And by the way, some appreciate it. If anyone out there has the time to look it up, find the interview from Muhammad Ali when he appeared on the BBC. I don't know the exact year, but I believe it was late 70s or early 80s. Very hard to find it because the BBC host tried to bait Muhammad Ali into a hating whitey diatribe, but he got something completely the opposite of what he had expected. Muhammad Ali schooled him on the blessings that he and his other African brethren have received from the time that they landed on the shores. And in his words, he says, I kissed the ground that my ancestors landed on when they got off the slave ships here, because we never would have had these opportunities that this nation gave us and the freedoms and liberties. So I just want to open it with that. And I want to say this, and I'm going to listen to some feedback. You were speaking about, Joan Rivers. And I want to say one thing. Joan Rivers was one of the few genuinely funny comedians that were left after, let's say, George Carlin. But she was actually funnier than George Carlin. If you ever seen her on a talk show, just extemporaneously, you know, being a sounding board, she was fascinating. She'd come out with some really funny stuff, better than any late night talk show. And I feel terrible that she was killed, but clearly she was taken out in a doctor who I looked up that doctor at his clinic in New York City. He doesn't even perform surgeries there, guys. He doesn't even perform surgeries. So, Jim, what do you think about the fact that she was put out to pasture and there's no coverage whatsoever? You don't hear interviews with her daughter talking about, well, look, I have an attorney and, you know, we want to find out what happened. What does that say about our media and where we are right now?
Oh, well, of course, Reese. I mean, I've been reporting on this forever, that the media are all in on it. I mean, they get phony stories right and left. They even seem, as one of the articles I was reporting today, to take their marching orders from the White House. But it's all phony, fabricated, fake. Paul, your thoughts, and we're very near the end. Paul.
Well, yeah, no, he's exactly right about cognitive dissonance. But, I mean, it's just a lot of people will, you know, make that the Jewish mind virus, you know, our minds have just been completely ruined. There's another term I remember from the 90s called deracinated, you know, in other words, just you don't have that sense of racial awareness or racial cohesion you need. And anyway, putting it in blue-collar terms, going back to whenever, you know, it first started being talked about amongst myself and people I knew, we just phrased it as not liking all these foreigners, okay? And then we want to, like, throw them back overseas, throw them back in the ocean. You know, this is a natural sentiment. You know, I'm sure Reese is the same as me, same as you, Jim. We're decent, regular, everyday people, okay? I don't meet an individual and go, oh, I hate you, okay? We could all be friends. You know, nobody minds a black family here and there, a Chinese family, a Mexican family. But now you're talking about millions. Well, I got a problem with that thing. When it's millions upon millions, and you're going to change our country, and you look at the playgrounds now, and the playgrounds are not full of white children playing. They're full of foreigners.
Paul Reese, Brian, thank you so much, my friend, for calling in.
Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their glory.